And we now can introduce tonight's speaker, Lynn from Escondido. Let's everyone give her a round of applause. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Dave. Hi, my name is Lynn, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm not quite sure where I landed. We got a kitty, the meow thing. We've got a whitey. Then we've got a Filipino pimp. And then we got a hunk of love over there. Lynn, an alcoholic. Very grateful to be here with all of you. We used to have so many great speaker meetings like this in San Diego County, and they've all disappeared, unfortunately. So it's wonderful to know that there are still at least one, maybe two. And those of you who have the privilege to be sobering up with a fellowship that's so exciting and enthusiastic with funny names, this is the fun, the joy that we find in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not a valley of tears. I have a home group. It's called Back Porch International. I am a member of the steering committee, and I am the birthday person on Sunday. I am sponsored, and I have sponsees. My sobriety date is June 22nd, 1982. So I am proof that with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, one can be sober for 42 years. In here, we talk about faith, but I love words. And faith is to believe something without evidence. We all know what that is. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have more than faith. We have trust, because here's the evidence that it works. So you don't have to believe anything. Just look at us. It really works. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love the fellowship. I've attended 4,000 to 5,000 AA meetings in my life. I need them. They are necessary. There is no way I could do this alone. However, going to meetings is half of the 12th step where we carry the message. So even if I make 20 meetings a week, it's awesome, but it's an awesome 5% of the program. It will never be more than that. This program, this suggested program, has 12 steps, and it's in the big book. And I hope that all of you attend big book studies. Right now, I attend 3 of them every week. I continue to study my big book. It's informative, it's comforting, and I want the big book to be alive in me. Not like, oh, well, this is when I got sober. Oh, you know what? That doesn't apply to me anymore. I can promise you everything in that big book still applies to me. And those of you who are new, you're going to be hearing the word God. If you're anything like me, it was a huge disappointment, a God thing. They were reading out of that book. And I had a punishing kind of a God when I grew up, and I turned my back on that. And I didn't know there was a difference between religion and spirituality. And Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religious organization. It's in the big book. We do talk about those things, but we do not talk about our personal affiliation because it's personal. This is a matter of your own conception. You make up your own. We take that for granted. But in the whole world, there is not a religious organization, any kind of denomination, when they don't give you a picture, what he did, what you should do, how that looks like. Here we say anything you want. And I will be saying the word God today, but it's just the word. And Bill was extremely careful in the big book to use different descriptive words. It's just important that, you know, we're talking about something bigger than us. If I say the word flower, I'm not implying any kind of flowers in particular. I just want you to know I'm talking about flowers. It's the same thing if I say the word God. There is no religious connotation to that word, at least from me, whatsoever. But that was never a problem until I developed a little drinking problem. So, otherwise, who cares? And speaking of that, I had this idea. I'm really a homebody. And I told my husband, you know what? We don't need two cars. We can just buy a nice one, just one, and that'll be enough. And we've been doing that for a year now. And it works beautifully. And I was telling this gentleman, this is so cool to have just one car. He said, how is that? I said, well, I'll tell you what. There is always gasoline in it. It's always clean. It needs tires. Who cares? It's all taken care of. He does. So there you have it. And so I had my first drink when I was 13 years old. I went to a little party, and I bought 6 beers. And before I was halfway through that first beer, all my insecurities went away. Gone. I was always a little bit paranoid. I knew they didn't like me. I could not make friends. I was most likely in the corner looking at my shoes, watching the others play. I was extremely self-absorbed and self-centered already and really uncomfortable in my skin. And the half a beer fixed it. It was warm and comfortable in my gut where I live. This was the answer already. So I continued to drink my beers. I blacked out. I went to get my last beer. They told me Susan drank it. I found Susan and I slapped her in the face. First time out. This is not social drinking. And my double life, as the big book talks about, began for me that day, because when I came home, I never told my mom, you know what? The beer was wonderful. And it's weird. I hardly remember the evening. And then I slapped a girl in the face, Mom. And you know what? I can't wait to drink more beers. No, I was ashamed. I was regretful. I was confused. I did not have the words for what happened to me that night. And I kept it a secret for 14 years until I came to you in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, when you told your stories, and I thought, oh my goodness, me too, they're just like me. And you gave me the words. You helped me understand that I had an illness. But that day, to me, it was just my solution. And I drank for 14 years the same way. I know some of you wanted to stop drinking, not me. No. To live without drinking was inconceivable. I just wanted to be able to control and enjoy it. But I didn't understand that if I control it, I don't enjoy it. And if I'm not controlling it, then I'm enjoying it. There is no in-between for me. It sets up that craving in my body that no human power can stop. And I'll tell you what it means to me to be an alcoholic today with 42 years of sobriety. There is no evidence in medicine or in science that somehow the phenomenon of craving has fixed itself in my body. I will die with the risk of drinking again. That's why I'm not going anywhere. I'm hanging out with the pimp and the hunk of love. I mean, this is... I'm staying right here where it's safe. I'm not going anywhere. And I take my steps every single day. I mean, I don't want to risk it. And it's not like if I didn't go to a meeting for 3 weeks Oh, if I had a couple of little resentments and didn't call my sponsor, that perhaps I would drink. I don't know. But how long would I last? How long? And so if only the craving was the problem, well, Lynn, don't drink it. But the other aspect of our illness is the obsession of the mind. And just like for the craving, there is no evidence anywhere that should I drink tomorrow, the obsession would not return like it did way back there. I don't want to risk it. I love my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's interesting, in the big book it says that at first, we carry the message out of fear. I found 23 relapse warnings in the big book, and I pay attention to all of them. And that we must carry the message is mentioned numerous times. But eventually, we do it because of the joy that it gives us. You know how we hear this is a selfish program? The big book says the contrary. It's a program of being of maximum service to others. It's a program of being constantly thinking of others. That's what we do. This is not a selfish program. And I looked up the word selfishness, my friends, and to be selfish means to not consider other people. That's what it means. So I am of service to Alcoholics Anonymous about 20 to 22 hours a week. And does that make me selfish because I enjoy it? No, because I do it out of consideration for other people. So do not believe that because we carry the message we're selfish. It's a program of consistently thinking of others. It takes a while to get there, but it happens. I think I'm a good girl about 25% of the time now. I think so. If you ask my husband, that's pretty close to this. But I still have my moments. Let me tell you, last April, this is sober a long time, almost a year ago, and we went to my home group. We meet every other year in Arizona, and my sponsor were there, several couples, and Saturday night, my husband comes out of the bathroom and he said, would you mind cleaning the water around the sink? It would have taken you only 3 to 4 seconds. He said, that's not the point, Lynn. And it's not only water around the sink, it's on the floor and it's got hair. Now, we were about to watch a movie together in that bed. I moved myself on the other bed, and I didn't say a word until the next day. And so because I'm the guru in our relationship, I did my meditation the next morning. And I come back inside, and he said, it's going to be a long drive home. I said, yes, with your attitude. I mean, he's getting upset with me. So we make it home, and on Monday morning, he said, Lynn, we need to talk about that. I said, I think so, because if I have to go on trip with you with this kind of stress, I need to have my own room. He's like getting red in the face. He said, I'll tell you what. We are on our way to visit your family in Canada next month. If you want to have your own room and travel alone, then you tell them why you're there by yourself, because you travel alone. And I said, I don't need 24 hours, honey. I'm traveling alone. And, oh, he's on his way to the internet, and I know he's going to be canceling his flight. He was calling my bluff. And this was my idea. If it's that kind of stress, I'm going to be traveling alone. And so then I call my sponsor. 2 days. And of course, it felt like a house of cards. And it took me 10 minutes to make my amends to my husband. I'd been inconsiderate and mean and selfish and unreasonable and all blah, 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 blah. And so now I've got to make my amends. So you should see the counters in our house. I've got blisters. And you know, if you wash your hands 20 times in the day, it splashes 20 times. It's not like once in a while. That I can believe he put up with this for 8 years before finally saying, honey, would you please? And so even if I use a public bathroom, I wipe out the sink as well. That I'm making my amen, And so just to tell you, I'm sweet 95%. At that time, there is still a ways to go. And so for those 14 years, I just kept drinking more often, sooner in the day, and harder. I was never a social drinker. I drink to get drunk, to oblivion. I don't want to feel the way it is when I'm sober. It is too tight, too uncomfortable. And so when I was 24 years old, I got a license to practice law. And I'm saying that to you, I was the second youngest in law school. So I can have ambition, I can work hard, I can take tests, I can be very hardworking and diligent. 2 years later, I was a bar drinker in Quebec, and it was affecting my reputation. You know, the 12 and 12 talks about fallen woman. So I was doing a presentation recently, and I thought, let me look this up. What is a fallen woman anyway? And it's a lady, a woman, who has had sexual relationships before marriage. I thought, gee, this is first grade. I graduated that program a long time ago. So I thought, let me look up another word for my behavior. So I'm looking at this, and I find one that I really like. I didn't know about it, but it sounds so funny. It's a floozy. Isn't that funny? It is funny, huh? It is. And a floozy is a woman who has had several sexual relationships. So that's what I was doing out there. And so I moved to San Diego with my reputation, because I'm a bar drinker, and you know, I was woman bar drinkers by ourselves, we're very busy, like behind a tree, on the back seat, all sorts of things, showing up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you got a boyfriend there, and the bar closes at 1 o'clock. You have to get so creative to explain what you were doing. It's not like I was knitting booties, you know? And so I was getting in a lot of trouble. And this boyfriend, we lived in a big house and all the trappings, and he said, you know what? You keep drinking, and I'm going to kick you out. Now, if you're new, this is alcoholism for you. The big book talks about a great desire will not be strong enough. A great need will not be strong enough. Self-knowledge will not work. Your memory will not work because of the strange mental blank spots. Your human resources will fail. So here I am, an illegal immigrant. I have no money. That boyfriend was supporting me financially 100%. I was emotionally unemployable. I was estranged from my family. The only people who tolerated me were his friends. If you think I did not have all the reasons in the world to not drink more than 2 drinks today and avoid the bar, everything dependent on that. And so it's 7:30 in the morning, and my throat is parched, and I'm shaking, and I'm sick, and today I'm going to have just 2 at 4 o'clock, just 2 drinks, just 2 drinks. He's going to kick me out. Where will I go? And now it's 8:15, and I just can't wait for 4 o'clock. And now it's 9:30, and today I'm going to have just 2 drinks. And then I start to change my mind. And that's the insanity of alcoholism. You know what? I'll have my first one at noon and the second one at 4. Now, I have failed 1,000 times. There is no evidence whatsoever that I will be successful today. And you know very well that by 10:30 I'm drinking, and I'm drunk when he gets home, and I'm back in the bar, and he kicked me out. And so I ended up renting a room. I had no furniture. I was sleeping in a sleeping bag on the floor with my degree. And my clothes were on the floor, and I was living like an animal. I'm drinking around the clock. That obsession, my friends, is progressive. It's like tentacles in the grip of this, I have to drink. How can I get them? I need to drink. The difference between thinking and an obsession, this is important. Because sometimes you'll hear someone say, you know, I was thinking about drinking today. I don't know why. And then I call my sponsor, or I just forgot about it. And that's just thinking. An obsession is a thought that will supersede all others. That's an obsession. So for us to think about drinking once in a while doesn't mean that we're not working a good program or that we'll get drunk. And depending upon how it's bothering you, you may just want to get it out. Like if we have a drinking dream sometimes, this is something that I'd like to tell somebody just to put it out there for good measure. And so in the grip of that obsession all day, every day, and on June 21st, 1982, a Monday morning, what happened was I was sober from the neck up. I had binged the whole weekend, and it didn't work. It just didn't work. I could not achieve oblivion or a blackout or nothing. And I saw that floor. And I had a little bit of vodka. I got sick. I had a little bit of a beer. And I decided to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, you want to stop drinking? I said, no. I just want to learn how to have 5 or 6 and then stop. It's after that I get in all this trouble. And so he said, you're not ready for us. When you want to stop drinking, call us back. And during the next couple of hours or so, I heard loud and clear, Lynn, you're done with drinking. There is nothing left of this for you. I think that was something. This is my favorite word for God, something with a capital S. This is such a soft ball. If we're working with a newcomer who's an agnostic, or usually it's because they have a punishing God, and to just call it something, just something told me. Somehow something, So, Lynn, you're done with drinking. So I called back AA, and he said, great, the lady in your area will call you. So Beverly called me. Beverly is my Abby. I hope you remember the name of your Abby. And we talked a bit, and she said, would you like to go somewhere? And I thought, well, I'm a traveler. I love going places. I assumed they would take me to the La Costa Resort. I could use the mud bath, the massages. I was tired. I would send the bill to my ex, who was wealthy. I eagerly accepted. She said, great, my husband and I will pick you up in 20 minutes. They did, and it took me to detox downtown, 1111 Island, with the winos on the thin mattresses. Yay, another one. We made it, buddy. Yes, I won't ask you for your nickname. I'm done with nickname. And so he gives me the 20 question. And I thought, oh, gee, that's going to be easy. I've taken tests that were much more difficult than this. And I aced it. I got 17 right the first time I took it. He said, you're an alcoholic? I said, I know. And he said, no kidding. You really are an alcoholic? I said, I know. And he said, what's so funny or happy about this? And I said, well, I had branded myself a lot worse things than being an alcoholic. I thought I was immoral. I thought I was a bad girl. And by then I was lying. I was cheating. I was shoplifting. I was mad with my parents. I was embarrassing people. A couple of times before I was kicked out in the corner of the room in the afternoon, I screamed from the top of my head, loud enough that a neighbor 2 houses down heard it, They thought it was domestic violence. There's never been a man who touched me that way. Plenty of other opportunities, but not that way. And she called the police. And it was just me in the corner screaming. I thought I was crazy. And you're telling me that there are the people who drank like I did and who did those shameful things. And now they have a way to be sober and happy. This was inconceivable to me to put these two words in the same sentence. And they saw how sick I was. I stayed there 3 days. Then they recommended I went to the Seventh-day program next door. And then they recommended I went to the recovery home for women. And I ended up in Escondido at the Serenity House. And I know there is somebody here from the Fellowship Center. And so this was, oh, so wonderful. I stayed there for 10 months. I was sick. I really was sick. I had no idea about resentment, about relationships, about discipline. I was picked up from a floor. I did not like women. I was uncomfortable in my skin. This was so difficult. But they put me in a safe place. And guess what? I have had a bed every day since I got sober. Every day. My husband is a hiker, the kind where you need a poop scooper. If there is no bed, I ain't going. I think it's like PTSD. I love being comfortable. And so that's what I did. They told us to go to a meeting a day. And you know, drowning men do not ask questions. The flimsy read. And so I followed. I went to my meeting a day. Then they gave us a big book. And we were supposed to highlight everything that we related in Bill's story. And I did that. And then they talk about getting a sponsor. And I did that. And they told us to go to a big book study and a 12x12 study. And I did that. And today, I still follow my sponsor's suggestion. I'll tell you, my husband just booked us like a cruise. And it was a dream of mine. I've always wanted to visit that part of the world. And it was a surprise. So Tuesday, he said, come on to the office, honey. I'll show you. I spent hours today. And this is what I found for us, and it's in January of 2026. That's awesome, and it's just about to click for the payment to be made. I said, oh, hold on a second. I go back downstairs, and I had agreed to speak at a small event in Tyler, Texas. Oh, gosh. And so I said, I'm going to call my sponsor. For her, it's 9:15 in the evening, no response. So I called her sponsor, Linda, who's sober like 50 years. I said, Linda, blah, 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 blah. And she paused, and she said, how much service do you do in Alcoholics Anonymous? So 20, 22 hours a week. She paused. Do you think that you deserve a vacation? I said, well, actually, we were going to take a deluxe package so I could get Wi-Fi and still show up for my sponsor. It's like 17-hour difference in time. And so she said, I think God would want you to go. And you give them 10 months time, and maybe you can find someone else. So as I'm still talking to her, I go back to my husband, and I said, honey, Linda said I can go. And then the next day, I called a friend who's willing to go, and I called my friend who had invited me, and it's all settled. But it's just to tell you how seriously I take this service in Alcoholics Anonymous and commitment. And because of what I learned in my sobriety, let's say of my own, I decide to just go on the trip and miss this opportunity to speak. And we get on that trip and my husband gets hurt. You see, Lynn, you should have kept your commitment in Tyler, Texas. Lynn, this is, but once I've double-checked with my sponsor, and my sponsor is a kick you know where, I don't get any wiggle room for, this is a, it's a tough crowd. And if anything happens, I do not have to have regrets, self-doubt, guilt, I shouldn't have. And so, regardless of your length of sobriety, I so highly suggest to just double check. And, you know, it's a spiritual relationship sponsorship, and it's very intuitive, very intuitive. Sometimes I'll say something, and my sponsee will say, where did you get this? I don't know. It's just like, it's just coming. One of them calls me and she said, Lynn, here we are traveling to Florida for 2 months. And my husband get a phone call from his friend, John, and he's a drunk. And he wants to come and visit for 4 days, Lynn. I don't think I can handle it. I introduced him to my girlfriend and he cheated on her. I don't want to see him. And she's like, I say, yeah, I can see how you would be upset. Now let's talk about it. You give them a little moment of compassion. And I said, you love your husband? She said, yes. That he's a great guy. I know him too. She said, yes, he's a great husband. I said, is there any way that we could give that to him so he can be with his friend for 4 or 5 days? She said, Lynn, I'd love to, but I don't think I'm going to last. I said, well, do you like spas? She said, spa? I said, yes. Can you go for 2-3 days on one of those packages? And he gets to pay because he's bringing John into the house. She said, I love spas. And all of a sudden, she was looking at John coming over in a completely different way. And I don't know where that came from. This is just intuitive. But she said, how am I going to say that to him? Well, just, you know, honey, I love you very much, and you're such a great guy. And of course you can have John over. And I'll just go for a spa for 3 days. Then I wait for the call coming back, right? So it takes a couple of days. And she said, Lynn, I did it. And his jaw dropped. And he said, wow, let me think about that. And then he did. And then he said, you know what, honey? I came here to Florida to be with you. Thank you for your offer. But I don't want you to go out of our house because you're uncomfortable. I'll arrange it with John. And my suggestion was to say, and John is welcome here anytime he wants. You get to go to the spa. And so sponsorship, it's not just about being told to make amends and repairing things and being, it's a very safe place. It's very comforting. And there is a way, because we're responsible to help a sponsee getting honest so they can take that to their higher power, to the something, and then come back with an intuition on how this will look like now that we have invited God's grace and see if we owe an amen. So that's a tremendous responsibility, and I cannot be afraid of hurting their feelings, or they won't like if I say that. You know, sometimes we're just being delusional to believe something that's not true. And nobody who's been sober 20, 30 years like to be told, I think you're being delusional. Until we understand that it's just believing something that's not true. When we assume malice rather than love, this is just so easy to do. And so in spite of all that, that tremendous responsibility to love them and they know that they're safe. And if I talk to a girlfriend, I never have that kind of trust in any kind of guidance than if I'm talking to my sponsor, because that's a spiritual relationship. And so if you're new, not to be afraid to have that confident. And you get to read the big book line by line. That's what I do with my sponsees. It's amazing how few people have done that. And I'll get sponsees sometime. They're sober 25, 30 years. And we start with the third step, being convinced. Convinced of what? Well, that I need to turn my will. No. It's being convinced of the ABC. Do you know how few people actually know that? And so you can take someone sober a long time, and you bring that alive with those words, and it's absolutely magical. Do not rob yourself of this tremendous opportunity, and it's free. We do it because we want to. We do it because we love to. And so you're absolutely welcome to call that sponsor and to work with them. And so I eventually got out of the Serenity House, and then it was about living life. And I was filled with fears and resentment, and you know, I've got a short fuse. Self-pity is not my deal. I'm mad, and I slammed doors. And I was single for 25 years because I'm independent. They don't like it, them. And I just go on my merry way. So that little floozy over there, she's got a two-month relationship every year. So it's a different name of the same thing, flat learning curve. And then I met my husband. You know, we talk about spiritual experience and all this, and very few have a white light experience like Bill. For most of us, is a garden variety, and it develops over a period, you know, a long time. Mine is still developing. And I've had one white light experience in my life, and it's the day I met my husband. And you know, I'm so in love. I adore my husband. I respect him. I admire him, but it didn't fix it. We fought for 2 years. And this is a big guy, and he's Swiss German with that strong accent, and he's 6'2", and those shoulders. And I went at him with my finger the first time, and he said, "This is so disrespectful. I don't think it's going to work." I was sober 30 years, and finally somebody said, Nolan. So all of you, we have to have boundaries. We have to be able to say no. To say no is not being unkind. It's self-respect. And it's letting someone know what's acceptable to us or not. And it doesn't mean that they have to stop doing it, but there's got to be a consequence. You cannot prevent a bird from pooping on your head, but you can prevent it from building a nest over there. And so you just got to duck. But for me to expect that someone can change according to my preferences because they love me, that's delusional. I have taken hundreds, Dave, hundreds of 6 and 7 step over that anger. And I haven't raised my voice maybe in a year. That's how long it took for that anger. And somehow I can delude myself that if you love me enough, you're going to stop criticizing me. That it just does not work. And so it's about my inventory, and it will always be about my inventory. That sensitivity, and it takes most of us a long time to get rid of this handicap. Handicap. It's not a compliment. I used to be so proud of my sensitivity, like it may be superior to other people. And a sponsor told me, "Lynn, that's just being touchy." Well, I was a biker. Bikers don't want to be called touchy. My ego just couldn't handle this. And so that helped me curl tail and be willing to go to my higher power to have a higher self-esteem. If we look at that third column, the first one is self-esteem, where we hurt or threaten. It's the first domino, the first one. And what is self-esteem is what I believe about myself. If I believe that I am adequate, it doesn't matter if my husband makes a comment negatively about what I'm doing. I might say, you know, that's a great idea. Or I might say, you know what? I prefer to do it my way. I don't have to have my feelings hurt. Well, it took 2-3 years of work just for that one thing. It's about my self-esteem. If I feel that I'm attractive, I don't have to be concerned if I see my husband hugging other women. I won't even see it. But if I'm insecure about my looks, I'm 70 years old now, I mean, I'm going down the drain. You know, as I'm talking to you right now, my skin is sliding down to the ground. You know? I can't even maintain anymore. That ship is going down one way or the other. But if I feel confident and attractive and self-supporting emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, in every way in my marriage, then I don't have to be jealous or envious or worried. But it starts with that self-esteem. It's so easy to miss. You know, if you just do those sheets, self-esteem, yes, security, yes, ambition, no, pride, no, maybe, those check marks, I did that for 30 years. But I learned from Katie and Charlie Parker and Mark Houston and Joe Hawk in that line. And here we look, what is self-esteem? What is ambition? Ambition is what I want. I want my husband to stop criticizing me. So I'm going to sob. I'm going to cry. I remember telling him, just give me a little corner where I can shine. You know? Oh. I have suffered so long for so little. Oh, goodness gracious. And so to him, it was just sharing his opinion. He was not going to change that. And so now I can just listen to him sharing his opinion without that hurting my feelings. I'm sharing that because this is true freedom. I heard it, I think, from Filipino Pim tonight, that God provides for all our needs. And I am 100% committed. This is just before the third step in the big book. God provides for all my needs. Not my husband, not my sponsor, not any of my sponsees in particular, my siblings or my mom. No. It's my higher power through many, many people. And so if I'm asking you to go out to dinner tonight and you tell me you're tired, I don't have to say, well, you know, just rest. I'll come and pick you up. You know, I went with you last week and I was tired. You know how that starts? First you ask nice in case it works, or you go mean egotistical if that doesn't work until you get what you want, and then the show doesn't come off well, and then they retaliate. And so now I know if you're tired, it's not your job. So I can wait for you to be available. I can just go to dinner by myself. I can call someone else. I can go back to my higher power, whatever. You are free. There is a space in my life for everyone to make their mistakes because I don't need it. I go to my higher power. And my life today is so, so full. I do mostly online because I can do a lot more. And I have sponsees, Alaska, in different states. And I take them through the big book. And I sit at my computer, and I'm looking at the trees outside. And I have, well, we have 4 dogs. We just rescued 2 dogs from our neighbors who passed away. And we told them, you know, along during the years, what's going to happen to our dogs if we die. And we said, we'll take care of them. I volunteered my husband. And so they passed away sooner than expected, and we thought at least one of the 2 dogs would have passed, but no, Barney is 17, he's blind, he's deaf, he pees. But we're keeping him comfortable because we made a commitment. And so that's how that looks like, and I'm just with these sponsees, and with my sponsees, Saturday morning, we do steps, we do big book, their sponsees are invited, and then I just discovered I have a minute that I can do frame artwork. It's something that I sort of created with pieces of jewelry, and I put that on frame, and I customize it, like if you like red, I'll make something with red and pearls, you like cream, and then maybe if you're a tennis player, I'll get some charms that are related to tennis. And I've been making those frames, and I'm sending them off in people's homes, and they love them. And so I have my beads over here, my dogs over there, sponsees on Zoom. I don't need my car. You see, I can just be home. And my heart is full. There is so much joy. There is so much love. There is no time to think about what's going to happen to me. And Tuesday was one of those days, so full, so joyful, so happy. And my husband tells me, guess what, Lynn? I just booked that trip for us. We've been talking about that for years. And so if you are new, I beg you, give this thing a chance. And you can always leave if you want to. But give yourself a few months. Start studying that big book. Start slowly by taking some of those steps and sweeping the floor and going out for coffee. And this is the best organization in the whole world. We want nothing from you whatsoever. There is joy. There is friendliness. I promise you, someone will offer you a hand in friendship. Thank you so much for listening to me.
All right, that was fantastic. How about another round of applause for Lynn? Thank you.